hideous days ahead.
The fighting machines. Many authorities, including Ogilvy, my own chief assistant, and Sir James Stent, the Astronomer Royal, wouldn't believe me when I said that the 10 consecutive brilliant flashes on the surface of Mars were made by the firing of giant projectiles. But one bright morning, a few months later, one of them landed in a sandpit on Horsell Common, not far from my observatory in Surrey. We thought it was a meteorite at first, but it wasn't. It was a huge metal cylinder. And by the time we reached it, it was starting to open. Everyone fled from the crater where it had landed, but my scientific curiosity got the better of me. And I stayed at the edge to see who or what was inside. And formidable brutes they looked, too. Chinless, tentacled, oily-skinned, creeping around like massive slugs because of the greater gravitational pull of the Earth. Later that afternoon, Stent and Ogilvy were also overpowered by scientific curiosity. And before I could reason with them, they got up a deputation and marched away from the shelter of a clump of pines towards the crater in the middle of the common. Before they got halfway there, I was watching the whole thing from a hollow in the ground where I'd wisely hidden myself. The whole bunch of them were wiped out. Wiped clean off the face of the Earth. The Martians in the pit had turned the heat ray on them. A deep throbbing sound, a silver pencil of light, and a narrow ribbon of bracken and grass and trees and houses stretching as far as the eye could see was scorched and bare and blackened and smoking. This was the sort of weapon I'd been afraid of. And it wasn't by any means the only one, as I was to discover. The two helicopters that had been hovering overhead hurriedly flew off. The Martians hadn't deigned to take any more notice of them than if they'd been two blue bottles buzzing round. They resumed their busy preparations in the pit. Everyone watching on the edge of the common was appalled. The first blow had been delivered so quickly, so effectively. The ring of troops and police, and there were hundreds of them all around the common, got ready. And just at that moment, high up in the cold, clear sky, we heard an odd and ominous sound. I thought it was the promised squadron of jets, but I soon realized it wasn't. We all stared upwards, and there, swooping down with terrible velocity, was another cylinder. Another of the dreaded falling stars. It landed, if you can call it landing, on Byfleet Goldlings, half a mile off. There was a colossal spurt of earth and shattered tree trunks. Another poisoned dart had punctured the green skin of our old planet, the Earth. And very soon now, the poison would begin to work. Once more, I expected the gunners to loose off a salvo at the crater. But the troops simply stood about anxiously, waiting for some brass hat to make up his mind. Probably they were still hamstrung by Stent's instructions to take no action. Well, I made up my mind. I started crawling away on hands and knees towards the road, using every scrap of cover. My respect for the heat ray developed early. Halfway there, I turned round, and I got the shock of my life. A copper-coloured machine had put its snout out of the sandpit and was nosing round like an enormous armadillo. I remember thinking, well, if that's all their fighting machines are going to be like, the gunners will pick them off like coconuts. Even as a scientist in those first days of the War of the Worlds, I consistently underrated our nightmarish opponents. Anyway, when that metallic brute started scuttling round the pit, I hurried off the common and made for home. Dora, please, please do as I tell you. Take the car and get on down to Leatherhead.
How can I? You know,
I'm going down to Black's garage to get a hire car. Now try and be ready to leave by the time I get back.
I can't understand why you've suddenly decided to do all this.
It's a matter of taking common sense precautions.
I must say it all seems rather unnecessary.
Dora, I'm afraid I've got to insist on your going this afternoon.
Insist? Really?
Now, it's no use getting impatient, Dora. I'm only thinking of your safety.
At 3 o'clock, you were telling me there was nothing to worry about. You were going to bring Ogilvy and Sir James back here. Well?
They're dead.
Dead?
Dora, the Martians have got some sort of ray. Oh. And the top of this house is visible from the sandpit.
Ogilvy and Sir James.
Oh, come along, darling. I'll get down a suitcase for you.
Poor Sir James.
I've got a feeling this whole place is going to go sky high any moment.
Were they in pain?
It happened very quickly. I begged Stent not to go near them.
I can't believe it. It's like some ghastly nightmare.
Well, we've got to keep cool and think quickly.
But leaving?
It's the only sensible thing to do. Now, you go and pack, Dora. And don't go near the attic.
What?
Stay away from those upstairs windows.
But what shall I take? I can't just go and leave everything.
Oh, yes, you can. There's no two ways about it. Don't take more than you can help. I want you to get there as quickly as possible.
John, all this is nonsense. It's not like you.
Dora, listen.
I'm not leaving.
This isn't an ordinary emergency, Dora.
I'm not leaving this house this afternoon, John. I'll go tomorrow morning.
Now, look, Dora, I don't want to...
No, John, it's unreasonable. I'll pack and be ready to leave first thing in the morning.
Now will you go and pack, for God's sake?
What's happening?
Now go and put your things together. I'll drive down to Black's. I won't be more than 20 minutes.
We got to Leatherhead about 9, with a pouring rain. I snatched a plate of soup and a sandwich, left Dora in our own car, and began the journey back in the car I'd hired. Dora's face... it was very white when we parted. Heaven only knows what impulse urged me to return to Ottershaw that night. Somehow I felt I had to know what was going on. Sounds ridiculous, but I was afraid, really afraid, that the gunners had already exterminated the Martians. I had a desperate desire to get back. So, in the driving rain, under lowering storm clouds, I took a shortcut through Ockham, Ripley and Purford. And it was at Purford that I first saw the flickering red flames on the horizon over Maybury and Woking Way. Dark, drifting clouds of crimson fire. I set my teeth and plunged on. The roads were packed with cars now, driving in the other direction. A lot of them on my side of the road, incidentally. Then, just the other side of Addlestone, I heard a sound I'd heard before. The third falling star hissed through the rain clouds, enveloped in green vapor, and buried itself not far away on my left in the fields. I wrestled with the wheel of the car like a madman. I had a vague, terrible sensation of some impending catastrophe. The thin hail drove hard into the windscreen and nearly blinded me. Something like the wet, gray roof of a house was rolling towards me down Maybury Hill. There was a flash of lightning that lit up the tops of the pine trees, and then... how can I describe it? The object came out sharp and bright. A monstrous tripod, higher than many houses, was striding over the pine trees, smashing them, tearing them up as it came. A walking, glittering engine with steel ropes dangling from it. A vast, swaying tripod. Three thin, towering legs with a mass of machinery on the top. A terrible hooded cowl peering this way and that. I panicked.
some miracle, I was thrown clear, battered and breathless, and I found myself floundering in a pool in the road, dazed, drenched, bewildered.
I'd seen the first of the grey fighting machines. Wet to the skin, I crept up the hill. My God, how steep it was. And then, going down into Watershaw, I passed wet, twisted bodies every few yards. I stumbled on the landlord of the Green Man, and Holroyd, the police sergeant, crushed body jammed under his moped. It was a dark heap of smashed flesh and sodden cloth jammed against the railings outside my house. I stepped carefully over it and went up the path and let myself in with my latchkey.
I crouched at the foot of the staircase with my back to the wall, shuddering. Shuddering uncontrollably.
Is anyone there? Is anyone there?
Who is it? What do you want?
For God's sake, will you let me in?
Who are you?
Look, I'm trying to hide.
Oh, just a moment. What are you after?
Shelter, that's all.
Your face, I can't see, but is it bleeding?
No, pretty badly burned. Face and neck, mostly.
Don't I know your voice? You're that helicopter pilot, aren't you?
Well, it's the Prof, ain't it? What a strike of luck. Those bastards shot me down.
Look, there's some lint somewhere, and some ointment in the bathroom, I think. Hang on a minute, I'll switch the lights on.
Oh, don't do that. We're better in the dark.
Yes, can you deal with those burns in the dark?
Yeah, I'll have to.
Well, go on into the dining room there. I'll take it easy while I get the ointment and the bandages. Here. Have another drop of that brandy. How are your burns now?
A bit better. I dab that stuff on pretty freely.
You're flying over the common, were you?
Yeah, I've been there for the last 7 or 8 hours. The copter crashed and I just lay where I was behind some trees. I've only just crawled off.
What made you come here?
It's your first house I saw. You know, I'm lucky to be alive. The copter wasn't more than 50 feet up and hit the tops of the trees as it came down.
What's been happening this afternoon? I've been at Leatherhead.
They wiped us out. Simply wiped us out. I'm probably the only survivor.
Good God.
That ray. They knocked out the tanks, shot down the jets.
Well, why didn't they use bombs on the pound?
Why didn't they build up area with our own blokes so thick on the ground? You see, I was spotting for the artillery battery salvo. Well, it came into action around about 4 hours too late. They only fired a couple of shells when those machines that were rabbiting round the top of the crater began to stand up.
Stand up?
Yeah, that's right. There were three of them in that pit. They're some sort of devilish things on tripods.
Ah, yes, I see. That must have been the thing with a cowl that nearly crushed me to death.
So you've seen them?
Well, one of them. Well, go on. What happened after you opened fire?
Well, the gunners let go a couple of ranging shots when these shield-shaped things staggered up in their legs and calmly proceeded to slaughter everyone in sight.
Oh,
I got a marvellous view of it all from the cockpit. Yeah, marvellous, if that's the word for it.
Yeah, it was that ray of theirs, I suppose.
Yeah, that's it. That heat ray.
Did you see what it looks like? Is it very cumbersome?
Cumbersome?
I mean, can the creatures carry it about?
Yeah, they certainly can. They've got one apiece.
One apiece?
It's in a sort of a complicated metal case hanging from a steel tentacle. Oh, they blasted us out of existence with it. One squirt in the air and the bloody rotor blades disintegrated. Melted.
Aye. One apiece.
Yeah. The gunners never stood a chance. They tried to sight on the cows, but they couldn't elevate quickly enough. It was a shambles. An absolute bloody shambles.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
The ammunition trucks blew up. Everything was just a mess of melting metal and blood. Oh, the stench of it all.
Yeah. Have a bit more of this brandy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. Well, what are we going to do now? Any suggestions?
What's it like outside? Over towards the common.
Right. They're still hammering away in that blasted pit.
Well, we'd better hop off before they decide to leave it.
How on earth did they store all this massive machinery inside that cylinder?
Search me. God only knows what they got up the sleeve.
How the devil are we able to deal with them?
No, I don't think we can, somehow.
What's to stop them? And what's to stop them destroying the whole country? Every man, every woman, every child.
Every town, every village.
What's to stop them?
Nothing.
Yes. Well, we can't just sit here in the dark and moan before the thing's really started. It's pretty grim then over towards the common.
Yeah. It's a valley of ashes. Everything's gutted. They're standing round the pit like sentries, rotating their cowls.
And we'll have to give the common a wide berth.
There's nothing for miles and miles but pillars of red smoke.
And 24 hours ago, we... Yes, well...
You know, I was due to go on leave this evening.
I've got to get back to Leatherhead somehow. I was a fool to leave it in the first place. I should have stayed by my wife.
Yeah, but we can't go till morning.
You'll head for London, will you?
Yeah, the rest of my squadron's in Essex.
I'll get my wife to drive to Newhaven. She may be able to get on a cross-channel ferry.
Why'd you go with her?
Well, it sounds stupid, but I'm still anxious to see more of the Martians at close quarters.
Well, you're welcome to them, mate. You know what I think?
What?
I reckon in a couple of days the home counters are going to look like... Well, like a slaughterhouse.
Well, in the morning we'll find a car and I'll drive you as far as Street Cobham. I'll have to make a detour. Another cylinder's fallen near Addleston.
But another?
Yeah.
Well, how many more of them do you think there'll be?
Well, as far as we know, they only launched 10.
Only 10?
Perhaps they thought 10 would be enough.
But our chaps were all standing round on that common like a lot of dummies on a parade ground.
We'll beat them somehow. We've got to fight back.
Yeah, but that ain't easy. England's overcrowded, especially in the home counties. There's no room to manoeuvre. How the hell can you use aircraft, for instance, when it's your own people down there? It's easy in Malaya or Arabia or back home even. But here in Surrey...
Yes, I see what you mean.
I reckon we better scout round for some tucker to take with us.
Well, there's plenty in the house.
What about opening another bottle? I mean, if we've got to sit here till dawn, we may as well make the best of it.
Well, why not? Come to think of it, I've got a couple of hip flasks somewhere. We'll fill them up and take them along with us.
Yeah, that's great.
So, at the first chill, desolate gleam of daylight, we found ourselves an abandoned car and set out. And at Street Cobham, the lieutenant and I parted.
Goodbye, Nicholson.
Goodbye, Lieutenant. And good luck. We don't meet again.
Yeah. Chuck us, mate. Goodbye.
I was heading for Epsom via Weybridge. I found everything in a state of chaos. No one seemed to be quite clear about what had happened on Horsell Common the previous evening. Half the population was streaming away in flight, in cars, motorbikes, bicycles, even on foot. But the other half, it was Sunday, was got up in its best clothes watching the evacuees with lofty contempt. The roads were littered with articles dropped in flight. Clocks, shoes, silver spoons, everything imaginable. Just outside Weybridge, I stopped the car to have a word with a cheery red-faced infantry colonel.
Excuse me. Can I get through to Epsom this way?
Yes, old chap. Oh, I say, you look all in. Have you come from Maverway, where the fighting was?
Yes, I have, as a matter of fact.
Seems to have given our chaps a pretty bad mauling, eh?
Complete havoc. Everything's chaotic.
No, don't worry. We'll make them pay for it.
I hope so.
The men are pretty mad.
What are you doing about the civilians?
Oh, we're moving them out of the area, clearing a radius of 75 miles.
Well, you better hurry. These machines cover the ground pretty rapidly.
No, we've got tanks and artillery all round Weybridge. That'll settle them.
Well, it'll give you the chance of a decent shot, anyway. You think they'll come this way?
Well, so Divisional HQ says. What do these things look like?
Armored giants. 100 feet high.
Good Lord.
On tripods. Oh. And they've got a metal canister which shoots a very deadly flame.
A gun?
No, not exactly. A ray of heat.
Oh, sounds a bit far-fetched to
it's
me.
It's true, Colonel.
Well, I'd better do a bit of a recce.
Yeah, I'll be pushing on to Weybridge.
Oh, I say.
Yes?
We're bundling everyone out of their houses at Weybridge, but you'll find Brigadier General Marvin somewhere about. He'd probably be very glad if you gave him all your information.
Right. Best of luck, Colonel.
Same to you, old chap.
But not even Brigadier General Marvin and the gallant Colonel could save Weybridge. Weybridge was due for destruction. So was Shepperton. But the colonel was as good as his word. This time, the fighting machines weren't going to have it all their own way. I passed group after group of tanks and scout cars converging on Woking. The bells of Shepperton Church pealed merrily. In the square, an old gentleman clutching four or five flower pots containing orchids was arguing angrily with a corporal.
No, I shall most definitely not leave my house, my man.
Oh, now look here, sir, be reasonable.
I shall stay where I am and defy them. Yes, that's what I shall do. Defy them, defy them.
Now come along, sir.
Don't you dare touch that flower pot, young man, or I shall report you to your commanding officer.
I'm only doing my duty, sir. Brigadier General Marvin.
Damn Brigadier General Marvin, and damn you corporals. When these ruffians come, I'll be ready for them. Upstairs in my attic, young man, is the shotgun I use when I was in the local defense volunteers. The old home guard. If that shotgun frightened off Hitler, he can certainly frighten off these creatures from space.
Now, sir, come on.
Tanks and trucks and half-trucks everywhere. And people were either packing their belongings in their cars busily or hanging about with their hands in their pockets. I drove through the crowded streets with their deserted shops, some of them with boarded-up fronts. And after an unsuccessful attempt to locate General Marvin, I made for the bridge across the river. The sun danced on the water. The cattle browsed in flat riverside pastures. The silvery pollard willows were motionless in the cold sunshine. A peaceful scene. Then I heard them. They were calling to each other. Five of them, advancing obliquely towards the river, visible far away over the little trees and flat meadows towards Chertsey.
What are we going to do?
We've got to get across. Stay here.
They glittered as they rolled on towards the waiting line of tanks that confronted them, hulls down, waiting to open the first shots in the battle for Weybridge. Casually, the remotest, the one on the extreme left, twisted its cowl and flourished a metal case in the air. It smoked Chertsey with the ghostly, terrible heat ray. The fighting machines lurched towards us with frightening speed, swift and ponderous at the same time. The crowds on the bank stood stock still, petrified. Fortunately, I wasn't too frightened to think clearly.
The river! Get into the river, all of you! Into the river!
I dashed down the gravelly bank, headlong into the river. I kept my eyes on the leading master. When he got close, I was going to plunge under the water. The tanks had held their fire. Now they opened up altogether. The Martian's hood turned towards the batteries, and it swung loose its metal case, the generator of the heat ray. The machine loomed above Shepperton. A battery hidden in the outskirts of the village let fly almost simultaneously. The first shell burst 6 yards above the hood. Two more burst in the air near the body. But the fourth burst clean in the face of the thing. The hood bulged, crashed, was whirled off in tattered fragments of glittering metal. Decapitated Colossus reeled like a drunken ogre. Incapable of guidance, it staggered mechanically onwards in a dead straight line, smashed into Shepperton Church Tower like a battering ram, blundered on, and collapsed into the river. A spout of water, steam, mud, and metal shot into the air. The heat ray apparatus exploded as it hit the water. A huge wave, a muddy, boiling tidal bore, seized the water. We scrambled out of the water. Some poor wretches were too slow. Got boiled alive. And I saw the fighting machine sprawling, half submerged in the river, with enormous quantities of reddish-brown fluid spurting out of the machine in great jets. But the other four fighting machines had seen their companion destroyed. They swept towards us, spraying all around them furiously, indiscriminately with their heat rays. The tanks and batteries were silenced. I ran 50 yards and threw myself despairingly into a tiny side stream. Mercifully, the water was cooler than in the main river. The heat ray flared. Trees, fences, houses, sheds blazed and roared. I was in the middle of a blazing inferno. Dense black smoke mingled with a white fog from the river. Scalding white flashes flickered down the packed towpath and licked out of existence the helpless, half-demented crowd. I lost my head. I panicked. Tears streaming down my face, scalding, screaming. Somehow I staggered through the leaping, hissing waters once again to land. And then, oh my God, my God! I tripped and fell in full sight of the Martians on a bare spit of beach. I craned my head back in a frenzy of agonized despair, and I saw the four monstrous fighting machines carrying between them the debris of their shattered comrade. A vast metal foot came down a yard from my head, spattering me with sand and gravel. I expected nothing but death.